man. This aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the PBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whitening. I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a ship.
Can you please come in?
Point of order.
Greetings and salutations. Welcome to another episode of Sunday Times Politics Weekly with me, Amil Amrao. Thank you so much for tuning in and thank you for the support over the past couple of weeks. It's been a crazy couple of weeks in the politics spectrum. And I'm joined in the studio by my politics colleagues here at the Sunday Times, Zingisa Mvumvu and Apiwe de Klerk. I'm told Juanita Hunter is going to be joining us later on in the podcast, so we look forward to that as well. We come to you on the day where the UK now has a new Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. Guys, that's quite a shocker.
Yeah.
You've got Boris Johnson on the one side, a complete lunatic, and you've got a complete lunatic on the other side in the form of Donald Trump. I'm guessing we're not, can't be too racked up about us electing Zuma all back then, can they?
Yeah, I know. I know this is not a complete surprise.
I would take Zuma any day. I would take Zuma any day over any one of those two guys, just personally.
Yeah, Boris Johnson, chief. Ay, man, these people. But you know, it was not that much of a surprise because going into the counting and whatnot, everyone was saying that he was the favorite in his, in that race with his party. But I mean, Boris Johnson.
The world is going to. Let me not use that word. But anyway, talking about former President Jacob Zuma, let's look quickly back last week and what happened to him at the state capture inquiry. So Zuma is expected to come back to the commission after a lengthy consultation process ensues between his legal team and that of the commission's. So last week, after Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zombo summoned both counsels to his chambers on Friday to negotiate a way forward after Zuma had raised an objection to the way he was being questioned, Zondo announced that the commission will forward to Zuma's legal team a list detailing all the allegations and aspects set out in the testimonies of various witnesses who have previously testified before the commission that they would like him to respond to. Thereafter, Zuma is expected to submit statements responding directly to those claims. Now, this process is expected to take more than 2 weeks, after which Zuma will be called back to the commission to testify based on statements he provides to the commission. Now, this, guys, allows very little room for the commission to quiz Zuma on issues which relate to his term as president, which do not directly surface from witness statements that implicate him directly in wrongdoing. And guys, this is exactly what Zuma wanted in the first place. Do you remember before he came to the commission, there was the fight between his lawyers and the commission's, and he wanted all the questions that he would have to answer to, and he said he would provide responses to those questions and those questions only. This is sort of what's going to happen. So in summary, what's going to happen is the commission's going to say, for example, Barbara Hogan said this about you, how do you respond? Zuma's going to submit a statement and they're going to run him through his statement. So it leaves little space for them to ask him questions, maybe around sort of the questions they were trying to ask him last week when he objected, around what was his role in the executive of the time, how did it work, what were normal processes, those questions that he said he couldn't remember or he didn't know. So what does this mean, Zingisa, do you think, for what we can expect when the president comes back, or the former president comes back at some stage?
Well, in my opinion, I think if it's going to be the way you put it, then it gives the former President Zuma an opportunity to continue with his narrative. Remember, we did say last week that it seems the only reason that he came here for, he is not interested in answering to any of those things. He is just interested in presenting a narrative that suits himself and his interest and whatever he wants to communicate that is contrary to what has been presented here before. And if that is the case, indeed, I mean, already he has thrown this whole commission into disarray with his, testimony last week before the objection. Now everyone's talking about spies. I don't know how those people, those things really are part of this commission thing. So I think it is further going to strengthen him to present his narrative, which, to a certain degree, is a complete deviation from the terms of reference of the commission. Because it's one thing, I mean, now you hear even people talking about expanding the terms of reference of the commission, but that is the responsibility of the president only. For now, Zondo was supposed to have insisted that we stick to the current terms of reference, yes, of the commission. If people have got other opinions, they can petition the sitting president. The sitting president has actually the rights to amend terms of reference of a commission while it is ongoing. So people must not try shortcuts, but hey, as it seems, Zuma is not interested in those things. He's interested in his own narrative, yeah, which is a deviation. That is the fundamental point for me. It's a deviation. This commission, I really can't wait to see what sort of recommendations it's going to have to make at the end with people come here. I mean, just maybe as a side point on this thing, now Ready Club has applied to cross-examine, yes, Zuma on his accusation that he's part of it. Again, I don't understand how does that thing, her application has got anything to do with what the commission is trying to achieve, which is what I said last week, that Zuma had deviated this entire commission to something else that we won't know by the, yeah, end of the commission.
Yeah, look, I agree with Zingisa. The business of whether or not or who actually captured the state is now, we move from that when you deal with Zuma and his testimony. It seeks to have us having a whole debate about who was a spy during apartheid and who wasn't, who is a spy now. I mean, the point you are making about Ready Club, I mean, where did that thing fit in the first place?
You know?
I don't see how the dogs connect.
I think Zuma's also become quite fond of that term as well.
Yeah,
connecting the dogs.
It is now. Yeah, no. I mean, if he comes back, then I mean, you're saying he will give written replies, yes, so submissions.
Well, they're going to run him through the submissions that he provides to the commission.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know how
we should be fair attitude.
You know what will happen? Yeah. You know how it happens? As it happens now, what happens is, if I want to give evidence before the commission, I approach the commission, I sit down with their legal team, and we draft a statement, and I provide the background evidence and everything else, and then they lead me through my evidence. That's exactly what's going to happen now with Zuma. They're going to give him questions that he must answer to, and they're going to lead him through it by the looks of it.
So he's going to be treated as
a witness. Yes.
Who's giving evidence, yeah, other than someone who's...
There might be some extra questions here and there, but essentially that looks like how it's going to happen.
Jeez. Yeah, no, he's managed to outsmart us this one.
Of course, he always seems to do that. But anyway, if you want to listen to our podcast where we discussed Zuma's testimony in massive detail, I suggest you just click on the podcast below this one. It's last week's episode. That was great. It was a really heated debate that we had in studio. So guys, check that one out as well if you have an interest in that topic. But anyway, we're going to take a very quick short break. When we get back, we're going to talk about the story of the week. This time, it's Public Protector Busisiwe Mkhwebane and all the controversies that she now faces. And remember, if you want to advertise with us on this podcast, we've got quite a substantial amount of listeners now. Please email us at smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. That's smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. Join us when we're back.
Join me, Paul Ash, in a beautiful soundscape as we explore the world in the Sunday Times Travel Podcast. Find it at sundaytimes.co.za.
Welcome back. So, anyway, we've got Public Protector Busisiwe Mkhwebane in the spotlight once again because there's just so much surrounding her. She's got to fight battles on all three ends. She's got the president, who came out this weekend, basically slating her in a very respectful way. We've got the North Gauteng High Court today listening to arguments from Gordhan, Pravin Gordhan, Public Enterprises Minister, on him taking his report, her report against him on review as well. And then we've got a Concord judgment against her yesterday. So there's a lot that she's facing. Juanita, let's start with her woes with the president at the moment. It all started last week when she released her Bososa report into President Ramaphosa. What did that report say in summary?
I think that the fight actually didn't even start on Friday. It started earlier in the week when Ramaphosa entered the legal fray and decided to join Godan in his application to review that case where she found him to have violated the constitution with regards to Ivan Falaise
and the SARS Rogue
and
unit.
And then also taking his own action against the public protector, asking the courts to basically state a declaratory order on whether the remedial action that the public protector recommends, does it stand if it's taken on review. And so that's basically how the week started. Come Friday morning, the public protector then holds a press briefing and then releases her report into whether Ramaphosa misled parliament or not. And the main findings are that Ramaphosa inadvertently, deliberately misled parliament when he answered an additional question by Musi Maimane on November 8, 2018 about a donation made to Bosasa. We know the history.
Yeah.
Ramaphosa came back a few days later clarifying that actually what Maimane was talking about was a donation to his CR17 campaign. She also found that Ramaphosa acted or violated the Executive Ethics Code, acted inconsistent with his office by not declaring a report, not declaring the donations made. She found that he violated, there was a sort of conflict of interest there. She also found that there may be enough suspicion or prima facie case of money laundering as well. So it was really a damning finding.
I want to talk about two things with this. One, and maybe she mentioned this in the report, I haven't taken a very good look at it, so I've just briefed over it, but how do you prove that somebody deliberately did something rather than mistakenly? Right? And two, was there a need for Ramaphosa at the time to declare who was donating into his campaign? Because nobody else did at the time. Let's talk about that.
Okay. Look, Kanita and I, we actually had was it that long?
It was a long
discussion over the matter. I want to the deliberate part. How do you prove someone deliberately misled parliament? You have to have evidence.
Yes, exactly.
That the person prior to being asked such a question, they had direct knowledge or they had the info that was being referred to, which they misrepresented. Then there's no way, unless I'm mistaken, where she has been able to prove that.
So her justification for that finding, you know, in an interview she said, she has proof that the president knows. How she deduces it is that, A, the president knew about the campaign, B, he knew some of the donors, and C, he went to fundraising dinners, so he knew what was happening holistically with the campaign, so he ought to have known about this particular donation.
Look, you see, that argument only holds water insofar as it has to deal with the declaration of donations.
And not whether you misled
Parliament. And not whether or not he misled Parliament, because, I mean, what if I donated 5 rand towards Ramaphosa's campaign? You must he know all those intimate details? If he himself says, "Nah, I was not involved in the day-to-day managing of the account. The money was not being sent to my personal bank account, and there were people who were managing that. They weren't telling me each and every donation that is coming through." So I don't understand how she gets to that. It's going to be very difficult to then you prove that. And secondly, the other point, insofar as remember the report that I told you about? There's a report that I actually ran a story online for it about a certain MEC in Western Cape, Bongi Ngosi Madikizela, who they had complained against him. That his birthday was funded by people who were doing business with his department. Secondly, he failed to declare it. Now, she found...
Was it a surprise birthday party?
It was a surprise birthday party, yeah. She found that he had done nothing wrong.
And now, it's the same principle.
It's basically the same principle. And in that case, it's even worse because... the person who was who is the partner to the minister,
yeah,
was involved in organizing the birthday. His PA allegedly was involved,
mm,
and when he rocked up to the birthday party, he found familiar faces, mm, some of whom were actually doing business with his department. So as an MEC, you would have expected someone like that to say, wait a minute, so and so and so and so and so and so were there, did they contribute? I mean, the next day, and then how much they contribute, and then you declare. But she found that no, that was not the case. Then how do you then not apply the same principle to someone who says, I was not involved in, yes, in the day-to-day. These are the people that I know would have contributed, including myself. Instead, I feel that she should have then said, the people that you just told me that have contributed, you ought to have declared. Insofar as it comes to them.
And that's
the others,
fine.
You didn't,
yes,
know. And that's fine.
Yeah.
She should have done that. She didn't do that. I think she became excited to be the one who pulls the trigger, and she missed.
There's many legal issues that I think the president may win on. After reading both her report and the responses that was given to her preliminary report. The first one that will definitely, the court will rule in favor of Ramaphosa, is the fact that she did not give him the remedial action to look at before she made it public. Because that was the very same reason the court overturned the the South African Reserve Bank and, yeah, APSA case, and the Constitutional Court yesterday,
yes,
also reasserted that, to say the fact that you didn't do that is against the Public Protector Act. Also in the Quinty case, that's why the court interdicted the matter. Mm. All right? The second issue here is they are arguing jurisdiction. They are saying, you have no jurisdiction to look into CR17 funds. This,
yes,
issue is about BOSASA.
Yeah. Mm.
Talk about BOSASA and nothing else. I don't know what the court will say in that regard.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, this is more a political issue.
Mm.
Why does the president need R500 million to run an ANC internal campaign?
Yeah.
That is, for me, mm, the political issue.
Believe me, you need that much money and more.
But... And obviously what Apiwe was saying about the conflict of interest, those,
yeah,
are real issues. But I think that you know, just the way if you read the report and you listen to her public sentiments, a lot of it is not backed up in law. Like,
mm,
I give you an example, she makes a recommendation that the president be subjected to Parliament's joint, what is it called, joint ethics
committee, yes,
because he was deputy president.
Mm.
Firstly, a president is not a member of parliament. So how do you then get subjected to a committee of members?
But I've seen people arguing that at the time.
Right, but now let's talk about that.
What? Yeah.
Now, in her own report, that's what we're not talking about, like, you know, other people's arguments.
Yeah.
We're using her own reports.
Mm.
In her report against Fikile Mbalula, where he got that sponsorship, was it sponsorship?
Yeah, trip from...
Setgers.
Yes.
Linked to Setgers. So she found against him, but she said Parliament can't act because at the time he was not a member of
Parliament.
So the,
yeah,
question is, can you act retrospectively?
Mm.
And the answer is no, because her own report says it can't.
It says that. And quite a number of... In regards to the Ethics Committee, there are a number of ANC leaders who had then resigned from parliament when that ethics committee process kicks in, because they understand very well that if I'm not a member of parliament, there's nothing that they can do. It's not an ethics committee for South Africans. It's for,
yeah,
members of parliament specifically. So, and what I also don't understand is that we have been here before when there's a report against a sitting president, and then public protector sent it to parliament, and,
yeah,
parliament to deal with it
as they seem different, yes,
decided to create an ad hoc committee.
Mm.
I mean, having seen that process, because it was the first time such a thing had happened in democracy, having seen that report, and it, let alone the fact that as things went by, it was found to not have been sufficient to hold this one accountable, which is the former president Jacob Zuma. But then you then understand there's a precedent. You can then instruct Parliament to say, as was the case with the previous report of this office, please establish an ad hoc committee to deal with the matter, since the president is not a member of parliament. Those things, I'm not a lawyer, yes. I mean, but you shouldn't be committing such blunders, but anyway.
Zigisa, I want to talk to you about Cyril Ramaphosa's response on Sunday. All right, so he came out and had a public briefing, a media briefing, and very politely, that's how Ramaphosa is, I guess. But he says that, and he sort of slated the public protector for her findings, but he did it very disciplined and very politely. He says that, "I have concluded that the report is fundamentally and irretrievably flawed. This is strongly confirmed by my legal representatives. The report contains numerous factual inaccuracies of material nature, and the findings are wrong in law and are irrational, and in some instances exceed the scope of the powers of the public protector." Now, what do you make of that response in light, and how people how are people receiving it? Because we've had a former president who had findings made against him by a public protector, and the country went crazy. We took out our pitchforks and our axes, and we, you know, we had a lot to say about it. Now there's a sort of a different tone. Obviously, the political climate has changed. Should it have changed, though? Should we not be dealing with it, with Cyril Ramaphosa the way we've dealt with his predecessors?
Look, for me, Amel, the legal issue is neither here nor there. Well, yes. For me, in particular, I'll talk about politics in this particular case.
Yes.
Politically, for me, I think, first of all, the president, it is my firm view that he was ill-advised to have that press conference politically. It didn't favor him. Leave the legal arguments that he's making. Yes. They make sense to a certain degree. But as I say, for political purposes, it's neither here nor there. First of all, why I'm saying so, I believe it was a blunder on his part politically to admit that indeed he sourced money. Yes, in the ANC there's an unwritten rule. There's no rule that says you can't raise money, but there's an unwritten rule that it's known that it's something that people do, but you don't go out and talk about it in that manner. Especially given the whole capture talk that is going on, that business, this is how they capture the state, they buy politicians and all those kind of issues. And then secondly, I feel the president invited this kind of problem to himself. On the very first incident that started this whole thing, being the follow-up question by Moses Maimane, I feel he was not obliged at all to answer on the spot. That was blunder number one, politically, as far as I'm concerned. He was not compelled at all. In fact,
the public protector says that in her report.
Yeah,
she's misled on that one.
But
I think so.
You know what the public protector said? The public protector said, "You should have told Moses Maimane that, wait, let me do research back.
I thought you said she thought that he was compelled. Yeah, no. I missed that. Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. He was not. There was no rule at all in the rule book of parliament that compelled him. In fact, he had an opportunity to say, "No, I don't know what we are talking about. I need to find out the facts. I will come back with an answer to that." He didn't. And you see, here is a problem. Now it presents a moral problem. Yeah. The moral problem that I have with the president is that he campaigned on the card of transparency, accountability, and all those things. And I think that's why he tripped himself in the first instance. Now, when he is supposed to be transparent and account properly about the his funders, leave what the public protector says, but I believe as a person who rides on this high moral ground, who campaigned on that, on clean governance and all those issues, he's supposed to take the country into confidence to say, you know what, so much so that I have nothing to hide. It's okay, I'll deal with the public protector, but for my own credibility and character and political standing, I am going to reveal to you that these are the people I'm going to get from the people. It's fine, even if he maintains the story, which I don't believe that he didn't know, but I will get the names of the people that funded my campaign and reveal them so that you trust me going forward that these people are not going to have undue influence on me. And again, on that moral ground, I feel the president is found wanting. So I think those are the issues that are going to compromise him politically. But I guess going forward, only time will tell. With the public protector, I leave that.
Now let's talk about that issue of going forward. Now on Monday, the Constitutional Court, in a majority judgment, upheld the North Gauteng's High Court order in February 2018, which says that Mkhubane has to be personally liable for 15% of the legal fees in the Absa Bancorp case. Now, in that report, She had tossed the special investigating unit with the recovered $1.2 billion from APSA relating to a bailout for APSA's subsidiary Bancorp by the SA Reserve Bank in the mid-90s that was deemed as the apartheid-era bailout. She also ruled that Parliament should introduce a motion to amend the Constitution to change the South African Reserve Bank's mandate to focus on economic growth. So that's one judgment that's been found against Mkhwebane. And then on the second hand, the other battle she's now have to deal with is Pravin Gordhan's application to the High Court as well, challenging her report, her remedial actions against him in the SARS Rogue Unit matter. Now, we'll obviously have to see what comes of that. But if, for instance, hypothetically, that report does not go her way, you've now got two adverse findings against you, and then you've got the President's one review application that's coming through afterwards. What should... Where do you think Mkhwebane stands going from all of this? Do you think her fate is now sealed? Do you think that she's on her way out? Should it be left to Parliament to make that decision? Where do we go from here? Is our public protector, does she actually have the public's interest at heart?
So I looked at Judge Ceasing Kampepe's findings yesterday. She obviously delivered the majority judgment by the Constitutional Court. And it was scathing. You heard things like flawed, unintelligible, dishonest. You heard such, you know, strong language from the justices at the Constitutional Court. And their argument was that the public protector was dishonest in the High Court application. She didn't make information. Only when she was backed into a corner did she then come forward with information. Why do you meet with the President of the State Security Agency on this matter and then not declare it in your report? Then there was issues of the actual findings, the way she acted. So they made a finding against her conduct, which is why they then agreed that she should be personally liable in the matter, right? The minority court judgment was the one that really intrigued me, because the public protector said she notes that judgment, which has no legal standing, right? And that was written by the Chief Justice, Mokgweng Mokgweng. And the Chief Justice said, it's so that Mkhwebane's report is so bizarre that anyways it was going to be reviewed. He says that's not even in question, the fact that the report would have been overturned. Because how do you recommend that the Constitution be changed? But he felt sorry for her and said, you know, she made a human error and she shouldn't be held personally liable for the cost, because this will crush her and it will also create a precedence for other public protectors not to act without fear or favor or prejudice. So that was interesting. But the reality is, if this was any other scenario, any other political atmosphere, that judgment alone, I think, besides Estina, besides you know, the High Court judgment in this matter, besides the Nkrinti case interdict, besides all of those issues, I think this Constitutional Court judgment is enough to remove a public protector. You lied under oath. You had one job. And you lied under oath. You violated the Public Protector Act. You violated the Constitution. The court has found this. For me, it should be the end of the road.
Well, I agree and disagree with let me say I disagree on the last part. I listened to the earlier post on the last part of the removal. You see, also still on that same judgment, I believe that all the justices, they were agreeing on the substance of what the public protector got wrong. But when I read the dissenting judgment by Chief Justice Mokgweng Mokgweng, it's premised on the fact that our justice system is not on destroying and finishing people off, but it's a corrective one. He even makes an example to say, even people who have killed people, who have raped people, that is why, for instance, you have no right, according to our constitution, to remove the, to castrate them, as our other people have suggested that rapists must be castrated. But it's to put them in jail and put them through a correctional services, a system that will rehabilitate them so that they come back into society as a better person. A more corrective sort of a justice system. And that's what I believe in as well, in that instead of trying to destroy the public protector completely by removing
But that's only about cost. He was only making the finding about costs.
No. I'm saying on the removal now. I'm coming to the removal to say also on the public prosecutor, yes, she blundered in law and all of those things, but how then do you issue a judgment such that it doesn't destroy her, it doesn't cause financial ruin to her? 900k, my brother, is no child's play. Yeah. Where is she going to get that? This is a financial ruin. You are financially ruining someone. That person has got a family to support.
What happens to the fact that you ruin the economy for that time? The economy suffered.
No, actually, Mukhweng goes on there to say where you say, yeah. I like how you quote him, where he says that there was no question that judgment was going to be overturned. He goes on to say, then therefore I don't understand why even the economists would panic. In fact, if anything, the people of the Reserve Bank were supposed to say, ah, guys, man, don't worry, this thing will be overturned, which is what he says. He says there was no chance that case was going to make it. So you see those kind of things. So, yes, she committed a blunder, but how do you correct her going forward?
I'm going to ask directly to you, because I know you're going to say something to this effect. Let me just put this out there. Now, McQueen's sort of rationale here is on the basis that somebody's incompetent at their job. But what if it's a deliberate... He's not taking into fact that she's deliberately doing this. She could be deliberately doing this to appease a certain faction.
As Kampepe and others kind of pointed to.
So I can understand trying to correct someone who's incompetent and trying to get them
and
better at their job.
And got the law wrong.
Yeah, got the law wrong by their own mistake. But what if this person is now acting deliberately to further somebody else's campaign? That's a different story. Should that person be given the same amount of tolerance up here?
Okay. I'm going to sort of be careful not to say the public project.
We're not saying that it's
no.
It's for sure.
Let me, Chief, let me speak for myself. What's going on here? So I'm going to be careful and not say she's deliberately acting for that particular faction. But when she came out with those findings, especially about the mandate of the Reserve Bank and changing of the constitution, we were shocked. But Kandi, what's going on here? You see what I mean? It came out as if she doesn't understand why she's there, what she's there for.
Yeah.
And I think personally, look, based on my own assessment and on her own inconsistencies,
yeah,
which we pointed out on the one of the president, it seems as if she doesn't understand.
Understand the law,
yeah,
and
or how she must apply it.
The court found in that regard as well,
insofar as it relates to the public protector's office. So I don't know. I don't have a confidence. I think even on cases that have got nothing to do with politicians now, you start to doubt, well, okay, will she be able to handle them properly? Will she be able to apply the law? It's a pity and law experts have said that is there in the rules of parliament and so forth.
Yeah.
Do not give them a right to impeach them, because they never made out the rules, as our story is saying, Thabo's story last week. You don't have it seems as if she can go to court and argue and win. Based on yesterday's judgment, No. You need someone who's going to be consistent and competent.
In her own report.
It can be small things like that. You just compare two reports that are speaking about a similar issue. Really, it shouldn't be a rocket science.
Well, we're going to take a quick short ad break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about what to expect when you're unsuspecting. And this week, we're going to talk about the ANC's NEC meeting coming up, and I'm sure to be a fly on the wall in that meeting, we all would wish for. We'll see you when we get back.
Young people are making their mark. Get up.
Tune into the Sebenza Live Behind the Hustle podcast every Tuesday to find out more about what fascinating careers are out there. You can find us on the Sowetan Live website,
or you can follow us on Twitter on Sebenza Live.
Sebenza boy.
Sebenza girl.
Sebenza.
Yabamdanam.
Yeah,
Welcome back. Now, the ANC's NEC is meeting this weekend, and I'm sure that meeting is going to be tremendously uncomfortable for a lot of people. When you had Zuma accusing some senior ANC leaders of being spies in his testimony towards the Zondo Commission last week, then you've got Ramaphosa and the Public Protector debacle, you've got Gordhan on the other hand. The ANC is going through a lot right now. Guys, what are we sort of expecting to come out of the NEC meeting this weekend?
I've said this, and I maintain it, that the Public Protector's report for Ramaphosa is not so much a legal drama for him. He may win legally, yeah, but he has lost it politically. Politically, this is a crisis for Ramaphosa, particularly because he has admitted to do something that's banned in the ANC, and that is to launch a formal campaign to get elected intra-party. He said to in the press conference on Sunday, oh, everyone, that it was not a normal election in 2017. There were so many candidates. Everyone raised quite a bit of money. But the reality of it is that you got caught.
And none of them have actually... I've never heard NDZ saying I had a presidential campaign.
We know that people had, you know, watches. And the reality of it is, we also know, as per the Sydney Mufumadi report, that even state money was used for the NDZ campaign. But that's not, we're not about the whataboutism. We are talking about the facts at hand. You raised almost half a billion rand. You had a coordinated campaign. Some of the people who donated to your campaign, you've given them positions in government. For example, Dunay Nicol, who ran your presidential, you know, the fundraising bit of it, she's your advisor. Bejani is your advisor now. Sibiso Dibengwa, isn't he on the ESCOM board?
Yes.
So you donated to the campaign, and now you're on the ESCOM board. So how is this different to Dudu Mieni being in charge of the JZ Foundation, and then getting on the SAA board? For me, I don't see the difference. And the reality of it is, you campaigned on ethical leadership. Nobody else campaigned on ethical leadership. Everyone campaigned on other issues of RET and whatever else. You campaigned on ethical leadership, and this is an issue about ethics.
That's a good point, Sigisa.
As I've said, my guy, politically, the president, it goes. Only the naive would say that he didn't blunder, and I think the real battle will start in this particular NSA. I really feel for him. I don't know how he's going to defend himself. There is no ground to defend himself. He has implicated himself so much by himself, as I say. Part of that press conference was further implication of himself into this thing. I think he should rather, employ a more apologetic stance, to sort of... say, comrades, I understand, I add whatever, this is how I'll correct this going forward. But that's the thing, the situation is so volatile, I don't even think that will work. So this may be the beginning of his political headaches going forward within the ANC.
Well, keep an eye out for the Sunday Times this weekend. I'm sure we'll have a story in there telling you exactly what happened in that NEC meeting.
Sure.
Some pressure on you. Bosses will be happy with that. But anyway, thank you so much for all listening. Please follow us on Twitter at #STPoliticsWeekly. You can interact with us there. Give us some criticism. Tell us what you think about the podcast, how we could make it better. And please share it. If you like it, share it. Tell your friends about it. And we'll be back next week, and I'm sure we'll have a lot more to talk about then. Take care. Have a good week, guys.